hustling.
Hustleberg. This podcast is all about small business in St. Petersburg, Florida, how the business owners got started, how they built their business, and how they serve our community. I'm Brett Bittner, and I'm the host of Hustleberg, and I started Beyond Your Side Hustle, a marketing firm where we help budding entrepreneurs go beyond their side hustles and ditch their 9-to-5s. As the founder of a small business here in St. Pete myself, I love meeting and talking with fellow small business owners. Lucky for you, I also like to record those conversations for you to listen to. If you find anything of value in this episode, I encourage you to subscribe to the podcast, because there are probably more nuggets in other episodes, both past and upcoming. It would also be great if you rate and review the episode to let us know what you got out of the conversation. If you have a question about marketing, building your brand, or operating your small business that you'd like to have answered on a Q&A episode, please visit beyondyoursidehustle.com/podcastquestion to submit it. In this episode, I had the opportunity to interview Doug Dozark of Cycle Brewing. You may remember Doug from our conversation in the St. Pete Open for Business chats, where he talked about how quickly things were changing for the tap room as the COVID-19 safer at home orders came to be and came to be enforced. Today, we have a longer conversation about Cycle Brewing and how he built it. Now, on to the episode. Enjoy. So, Doug, why are you brewing craft beer? What is that that's got you excited?
At this point, we've been at it for a little over 10 years. So, I mean, it's become much more than, you know, what's gotten me into it is what keeps me going with it, I suppose. But it's been a great industry so far. I think there's challenging times ahead, but I think we're well poised to face them. I'm looking forward to some of those challenges. I think it's been nice to go through startup and enthusiasm only for the product, to learning what it takes to run a business, to then achieving your goals and figuring out, you know, what's next. And that's sort of where we are right now.
Okay. What was it that got you into it 10 years ago?
I was new. Everything was, endless possibilities, really. Florida was pretty limited. I think Cigar City started, and we got our brewing license right around like March 1st, 2009. And I was actually volunteering at Cigar City, so I was right in the thick of things getting started in Tampa Bay there were some breweries before, which were, they were smaller and more boutique, like St. Somewhere was definitely around. Dunedin had more of a bar restaurant culture, which has provided a lot of longevity for them, which is great. But the movement hadn't really gotten going yet. And now it's seeing where it's come and how we've even had breweries come and go since then. So it's, I don't know.
Well, how was it that you got into brewing craft beer? Was it something like, aside from the business aspect, you said you volunteered at Cigar City.
I did, and it was just, you could do anything you wanted. I mean, that was taking craft beer to, it was pretty early on that I figured out you could go any direction you wanted. There's not one way to start a brewery. There's not one style of beer. You could maybe argue you need to make an IPA or needed to. But even then, you weren't really hemmed in by anything, and so many places were just throwing out the rule book for ingredients, what's okay, what's not okay. It was anything goes, whatever you can come up with is worth trying. And so that was, it continues in that way, but I think that's changed a little bit. It's slowed down, and now even things like the seltzers.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, I think, I don't know, some people get offended by them in craft beer. They're like, oh, it's garbage. And some craft breweries are making them. And, you know, I don't know. It's just sort of a, more of that progression of it, there's going to be people. It's almost gotten to be more of a beverage realm rather than craft beer. So seeing that is still interesting.
What was the first beer that you guys brewed with the Cycle label?
With the Cycle label, because we were Peg's Cantina and Brew Pub, which is just not a brand. It was a place. And so Cycle became a brand that we could put into the market. And that was, gosh, it was probably Freewheel or Fixie. Fixie, which we still make today. Freewheel is all Nelson Sauvin hops, which we just couldn't get anymore. So okay. That, I think we could sort of get them again now, but that brand never really, I mean, it disappeared for a few years, so it's whatever. But Crank really kind of took off. That was pretty early, too. And Cream and Sugar was always around. Those Fixie, Crank, and Cream and Sugar have withstood the test of time for us, I guess.
Now, what is your favorite style of beer?
Oh, depends on the day. Depends on the place. Lately, I've been really enjoying making and drinking lagers of various types. Pilsner's always been a great style. In my mind, I've enjoyed Pilsner's from before craft beer. I knew what craft beer was, and European Pilsner's usually, I like a little more of that bitter, kind of dirty flavor as opposed to the Miller Lite fine Pilsner type flavor. But still, I mean, I think there's more, it's a different challenge brewing those as opposed to what I did for so long, which was just try to just smack people in the face with whatever we were brewing, Imperial Stouts with adjuncts, IPAs with hops, which we've done some, we still do a lot of that, but for me personally, I can't be smacked in the face too many times and still come back.
So it's clear that bicycling has something to do with it. We're talking about Cycle Brewing.
Sure.
You said the first place was named Pegs.
Yep.
The IPA that I drink is called Crank.
Yep.
So how does that fit in the bike and the beer?
That was sort of coincidence. At the time when we were getting started, because we had been making beer, but we didn't have a brand name, so it was sort of just a brainstorming session. And cycling for me has been, I did a bicycle touring trip in Africa. I've done some other cycling stuff. I'm not a racer. It's more of a lifestyle. Like today, we're a one-car household because I bike to work when it's too hot. I like to walk as well, but at the time it was a lot more biking, and biking was just mode of transportation. And it's, you know, it's green. It's free. I like to get around on a bike. Of course, I follow all of the rules of the road, but maybe not always. So I think cycle and bicycling is more, I just felt like it was more of a lifestyle that I was part of, and while you're not supposed to drink and bicycle, I think it's definitely better to be tied in with something like that as opposed to like drinking and driving. So it's not really an endorsement of that, but I just think cycling is my preferred mode of transportation, and it was what was relevant at the time when we got started.
Now, you guys have quite the setup. We're meeting in the warehouse, not in the tap room.
Mm-hmm.
This is a manufacturing setting. What's the most important lesson that you found when you kind of moved from that step beyond homebrewing and into something like this?
We never really homebrewed. Had the opportunity. Homebrewing, I think one of the things that I would have fallen into that I know a lot of other homebrewers have is, 5 gallons of beer, about 2 cases, doesn't seem like that much. When you want to make beer a lot and keep refining recipes, it piles up pretty fast. And, oh, I'll just have friends over. Pretty soon your friends even can't drink all that beer. So I would have run into that, but because we were a brew pub, we were brewing very small scale, but we always had an outlet we could always move in. So I in the first probably 2 years, brewed 1,000 batches. Just because some were so small and it was constantly refining recipes, I'd say 75% of those were IPAs. And then going beyond that, the biggest challenges were cash. At the time, 2011, 2010, you know, we weren't that long in the business. There was certainly nobody around that was expanding rapidly that wasn't doing it with cash. I mean, Cigar City, we were buying stuff, but it was, you know, Joe Redner's money. There was access to money. So for us, talking to banks, they were really not sure what we were talking about. And when you put together, like, financial projections, they're like, well, that doesn't look reasonable, but it does. And so getting access to money was really hard. And so we grew, and I'm glad in some ways, because growing slow has really I think it's been one of the keys to, and will be a key to our continued existence and success, is we haven't had to, you know, get that $5 million fund raised to build out a facility. But I also look around at our facility and think, you know, this would have been nicer if we had a few hundred thousand dollars instead of, you know, a BP settlement check for $19,000.
Yeah.
So that's been one of the challenges. And then beyond that, it's just fine-tuning, you know, what's working, what's not working, what's worth doing, and maybe what's not. Like, we've got a deal with BrewHub, so we got out of distribution. We don't make any beer for distribution anymore. BrewHub has been doing that, and they've been doing an awesome job. Their equipment's way nicer than anything we would be buying, and they handle a lot of the raw materials, their sourcing, their buying power. All of that is advantages that they struggled a little early on, but I think they've really, Chris over there has really honed everything in, and they've been making some fantastic beer for us and for themselves. It's a cooperative agreement. So
now your ideal is empty kegs and empty pallets, right?
Sort of.
Okay.
I mean, what we do right now at the warehouse, all we do is the barrel aged beer here for the most part. We can do other stuff, and we have, but our focus is on the barrel-aged beer. It's what we're probably the most well-known for outside of the tap room out in the world. And I think, you know, we don't want this place to be empty, because we need, I mean, that's a year or more long process. So actually, beer in barrels is the goal, having a supply to always follow up, always new barrels, varieties of barrels, different stout recipes to pull from to create new products. That's sort of our goal right now. And really just maintaining that, which has become pretty easy, logistically anyway.
Now, what are you doing advertising, marketing-wise, to make sure that people know about all of the beers that you have?
Not much.
Okay.
Be honest.
It's all reputation.
We've always been pretty reputation-driven, and I think that's been mostly a good thing. I think the BrewHub, with their connections, has gotten our brand out there a lot farther. We've got six packs in Publix and ABC and Total Wine and some gas stations, convenience store type spots. So that's been, and then supporting them with events, that's been, for me, our investment in marketing. And then beyond that, we've done a lot. We just keep people up to date with what's going on Instagram, Facebook, and announce releases. And then what we were going to be doing before coronavirus was attending more festivals and I was going to be physically present at a lot more events, and of course all of those got canceled, so that plan still looks good, but when that happens, I don't know.
Now, how much of your time would you say you spend working in the business, in the day-to-day, versus on the business in growing and keeping toward your ultimate goals?
It's probably about 50-50. I need to be at the facility about every day, but depending on what we're doing, there's some days where it's just checking on a beer, minor repairs. I mean, brewing equipment is not that prone to breaking, but there is always maintenance on. I mean, our warehouse is just a maintenance nightmare. There's always something to be fixing or cleaning. But beyond that, I spend more time. It's a lot of emails, a lot of emails, because we're working with like Tavor out in Seattle. We did something in Arizona, so Europe we've exported to recently. I mean, coronavirus just shut down the United States, but some people were direct mail type operations where they could sell direct and ship direct to consumers, which we can't do. Although sort of some people said we can. The coronavirus sort of opened up some doors that may or may not close again. We're kind of waiting to see. But our prior relationships with those companies have been good. So I spend a lot more time coordinating with them. And then there's always plenty of paperwork, alcohol, documentation, inventories, tax forms, all of that stuff, really. It's just constant work.
Is there anything that you're reading or listening to or watching that's helping you guide the growth and expansion of Cycle Brewing?
No, it's been some good conversations with other, with some peers, just batting around ideas. I've got some good friend who's working on a membership only brewery. So it's, I guess there are some wineries that have been doing that for a long time, and so the only way you get access is to join the club, and part of your membership fee includes some bottles, which breweries have had those, like Cigar City had El Catador Club, which works that way, but they also had all of the other stuff they're doing, and his business model, which we've all been, a bunch of us have been debating the merits of for quite a while, he's actually going to do it. I think he's, the first beers are out this fall, and so it's, we're all very interested to see how that goes. And then on top of that, it's been finding legal loopholes, or really just opportunities. They're not even, I wouldn't call them really loopholes. It's not finding a way around. It's just discovering and digging into different state laws. So like what Tavor is doing, why couldn't we just have a company in Seattle and ship it to ourselves? Mm-hmm. And then direct ship out. I mean, then we could, is that something we can do? California, we're looking at something like that. Like Arizona, we just sent beer's going out today to Arizona, and technically we're selling it direct to retailers, okay. Which is allowed. And then, but how that all works, I mean, there's a lot of, so finding those opportunities has become sort of I think it's going to be a growing thing, and I'll bet there's some attorneys out there who are going to do pretty well, because digging into the state laws, and then beyond that, the letter of the law is not always the rule. Certainly not in this state. When you read a lot of the stuff, you're like, oh, you should be able to do that. And when you talk to the regulators, no, you can't do that. We know what the law says, but you can't do that.
Right.
And so unless it's expressly allowed, it's not permitted. So there's stuff like that, is figuring that out is a challenge. And we've pushed a couple limits and then been told no. And then even on top of that, there's the private companies. When you want to direct ship, mm-hmm. FedEx, UPS, they have their own rules. And we thought FedEx has a method for shipping alcohol. You can ship wine all day long. And we had that working through Colo, which was a courier service. And then FedEx just decided, no, we're not going to do that anymore. Oof. And when it asked to explain it, it's against our policy.
Got it.
It's like, I don't see that. But they're like, well, it is. Too bad. It's like, what do you do?
Yeah.
You're just, they're a private company. They can do it or not. It's up to them. So you're fighting that. And I think as there's more, I think coronavirus is really going to push a lot of that, which I'm happy to see. I'm looking forward to seeing what opportunities are out there.
So, Doug, are you a native here in St. Pete or the Tampa Bay area?
Nope. No.
Where are you from?
I was born in Iowa.
Okay.
I grew up there in Iowa City, and then I went to college in northern New York, 7 hours from New York City. So you're like, oh, upstate, it's much, much farther than that.
Where it's just nothing.
There's nothing. You're north of the Adirondack Mountains. It's bleak. Winter is long. I did enjoy my time there, but it is not a scenic place to visit.
Well, I've driven across, leaving from Boston to head to the Midwest, and driving through that part of New York, there's literally nothing there along the
way. Yeah, there's a lot of people in New York State, but there's a lot of empty space.
Oh, sure.
And it was good for college, but I'm glad I'm not there. And then after college, Peg is my mom. So Peg's the restaurant was actually, she was a professor, and so was my stepdad, and they quit their jobs because they didn't like living where winter was anymore, and they moved down here where they actually met at USF. They both worked there prior, and I was out of college, so it was sort of opportunity to do something. They wanted to open a restaurant. I'd worked in some restaurants, so it was, we had enough experience between all of us to pull that off. But that was 2004, so it's been a long time. I've lived here a long time.
Now, if you aren't here in the warehouse, mm-hmm. and you're not visiting the tap room, where can we see you? What can we see you doing around St. Pete?
Walking down Central. And
okay.
If the weather's nice, you can find me. I walk probably twice daily down from 27th to Beach on Central. It's like an hour walk almost. But now that it's hot out, I'll be on the bike. I spend a lot of time at home. I've got a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old. Especially lately, I spend a lot of time at home. Just because taking care of kids during all of this is absolutely full time. My wife is. We both have good days and bad days.
Sure.
I'm looking forward to being able to go to the swimming pool again. But yeah, I try to get out, but I'm not. It's not. I don't do a lot of organized activities right now with the protests. I'm trying to do the bike safety with keep people safe with that. I think that's an important role that I feel that I can be a part of.
Absolutely. Now, you talked about some of the events that you were looking forward to in 2020. Are any of those back on the calendar, or are we looking to 2021 where we can see you and cycle out and about, or is it just the tap room right now?
Right now, yeah, the tap room. I don't even know if 2021 is going to happen on schedule.
Wow.
I know a lot of events got pushed to the fall. Some of those have already been canceled again. I was looking at the fall thinking, okay, the weather will be nice. But now I'm thinking I'm not going to invest in trying to put on an event in the fall that we're just going to have to cancel. Honestly, until there's a vaccine, I don't think that we're going to be able to have a scheduled events the way we did before. And I hope we can. I hope that's soon, but I'm not investing in it yet.
Okay.
Even if we have a vaccine and it exists, getting everybody to get vaccinated and then make it safe for air travel and people to feel comfortable with air travel. I mean, they're doing it, but I don't know. I haven't talked to anybody who's like, oh, it's perfectly safe. I'm ready to get on an airplane with a bunch of people and face masks who may or may not be sick. Like, people may do it, but I don't think anyone's excited about doing it. And going to Beer Fest, taking vacation, I think you really have to be comfortable doing that. And
sure.
I don't know. We have still on the calendar in Copenhagen in October, but I'm not sure that's going to happen. I haven't bought a plane ticket, that's for sure.
Okay.
Let's wait and see. So that's why we're looking at all these other avenues for getting beer out. We sell beer online, which we can't ship, but it allows people to get access and then pick it up. Or then there's all these other, like Tavor is a great one. They shipped, I think, 30 states right now. So when we send beer to them, it's online. So if you're not local, even though they do ship to Florida, I believe, so you could be in Jacksonville, it'd be a long route for that beer to go from here to Seattle and shipped back to Jacksonville. But it's legal. The prices aren't too bad when we operate that way. So it's probably cheaper than driving down to St. Pete.
Yeah.
But that's getting people to have access to our products that way, and then maintaining with BrewHub the presence in the grocery chains and things like that. That's kind of our game plan.
So where can people find out more about Cycle Brewing? Obviously, you have the online if they want to pick up at the tap room.
Sure, yeah. And we will probably, now that we're back open to some degree, we'll put our tap list back up to make it easier. But the online menu had the crowlers that were available, which is more or less the tap list. So you can find out more there. Facebook, to some degree. Instagram, we haven't done a ton of updates because there hasn't been a lot of concrete information to put out there.
Sure.
Stuff just changes so rapidly. So when they allowed food trucks to count as a restaurant for a brewery, we said, well, we have a restaurant across the street, so we're just going to count that instead. But then the George Floyd tragedy happened, so now, you know, no one was really paying attention to whether or not you're open anymore. The police had much better things to be doing. So it was sort of anything goes, but now comes down to staff comfort. Like, I'm not going to force my staff to try to pack out the bar. They're not that comfortable doing that. I'm not going to be the one at the bar, so I'm kind of letting them decide what feels safe, what customers are saying. So we're not putting out a hard policy of this is exactly how many people we have, or we're definitely going to turn people away at this. It's what feels right and what works, and the hours have become a little loose. But we're going to be updating. I think the hours are going to change starting tomorrow. So we'll go back to more of a regular later afternoon open, staying open later at night, especially in the summer. It's
much more pleasant.
Hot.
Yeah.
So darn hot. So that's been the real downside of the timing, is things opened up and you're like, everybody, you can have as much outside seating as you want. We're going to close parking spots so you can put tables out in the street. I'm like, perfect. 90 degrees sitting on asphalt. Awesome. Thanks so much.
Well, Doug, it's time for me to thank you. I really appreciate the time that you've taken and talking to the folks that listen to Hustleberg.
Well, thank you.
Hey, you did it. You've just listened to Hustleberg. To thank you for listening, we have a free guide to help you get started marketing your business online, aptly named Our Getting Started Guide, available at beyondyoursidehustle.com/get-the-guide. See how to begin with the first three things you should be doing for your business. Speaking of businesses, if you're a small business owner in St. Pete and you'd like to be a guest on an episode of the podcast, please let us know at beyondyoursidehustle.com/podcast-guest. If you got something of value from this episode, please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app. This is something small that you can do to help us shine the spotlight on all the great businesses St. Pete has to offer. The music in this episode is Defining Your Dreams by my friend Rhymer Educator. You can listen to his latest single, The Last One, on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you listen to great music. Thanks so much for listening, and we look forward to sharing with you how we do business in the Berg.